You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio. We are exploring our food system, a large, flexible subject which can reach from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. While we're talking local, the ideas are pertinent to any food system. This edition features an interview with Will Allen of Growing Power, the flagship of urban agriculture. I'm your host, Sunny Gardner, and I met Will Allen at the Virginia Biological Farming Conference last year, where he was the keynote speaker. He graciously agreed to sit with me and be interviewed before the early session where he talked about vermiculture. The crowds went crazy over the tangles of worms he had brought along from Milwaukee. You could visit growingpower.org to see the worms, fish, bees, compost, vegetables, flowers, goats, chickens. You'll be amazed at how much agriculture is taking place in the middle of that major city. Our city has a good-sized handful of community gardens, and that number is growing, thanks to the many concerned and hardworking people who are getting dirty out there. You've heard some of those people talk about their work on Lightly on the Ground Radio over the past year. Will Allen and I jumped right in because we had just had breakfast together with a few other biological farmers. Here's what he had to say about how he got started with Growing Power.
Well, I've been doing this work in Milwaukee for about 16 years. When I bought the last remaining farm in the city of Milwaukee, it's a historic farm. Started back in the 19th century, and the buildings were constructed in the late 1900s. It's really interesting what happened in terms of urban agriculture, because most people 16 years ago really didn't embrace urban agriculture. I think many of the urban gardens were looked at as, you know, like ugly places on corners or whatever. There were just a few of them where people grew stuff, but the aesthetics weren't pleasing to city officials, and they would only give like 1 year leases for land and that sort of thing. So you really couldn't have any kind of permanency in terms of really doing natural farming or organic farming in the cities, because you have to build soil. Obviously, the soil is contaminated, so you have to bring in soil. It's very expensive, so you need more of a long-term kind of situation to be able to be successful. But over the years, through engaging the community and really working with youth in the community, is probably the quickest way to get families and others involved. As you move along the continuum and get the adults involved, I always think that the kids are the most powerful folks in communities, because they know what's going on in the community. They're kind of the heartbeat, as far as I'm concerned, in the community. They know where all the negative things are. They know who's doing what. Whereas most adults are involved in so many other things, they're pretty much oblivious to what's going on inside cities, especially in inner cities. So having a youth program and starting out working with youth was kind of a vehicle to drive the stuff that we're doing today.
So how do you find the youth?
I tell you, one of the things about what happens if we're going out to work on a vacant lot in any community in America, you go out and you drive into an inner city area with your trucks and your tools and so forth, and you park and you get out of your vehicles and walk over to the lot with that stuff. 40 kids will run out of their houses and come over, and they want to find out what you're doing, what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And they say, "Can I help?" That is the number one thing that comes out of their mouth. "Can I help?" And at that point, it becomes an opportunity to engage the kids. You have two choices. You can tell them to go away, you're bothering us, and so forth, or you can invite them in and give them a piece of the territory. It is their community, so you're really not giving them anything. You're getting them involved in what is their territory, where they play, where they hang out, and so forth. So it's a way to get the kids engaged, and from that point, they stay engaged forever. They look at it as something they helped start it. You're starting from day one, and I'm a big proponent of any kind of community development stuff. You bring people in on the ground level, on the very beginning of the project. You don't bring them in at different stages. I know that that's a very top-down kind of approach where organizations that come in and say, well, we're going to bring the community in on day 55, and that's not good. And when you can get folks started on the very first day, they become part of the planning process, the engagement, that's how you really start engaging your community. And once the community finds out that you're doing something positive, that you're leaving something permanent in their community, that is what really works, because those communities have been exploited by universities and researchers over the years, where they come in and they take stuff out of the community and don't leave anything behind. So many communities are leery of folks coming in today because people are much more aware. The media, people are just much more aware of things, and they've been treated poorly. So when you come in and you're a positive force and you're putting something into the community and you're working with their kids, because many families are stressed out and they really need the help. And we're not acting as babysitters. We're acting as folks that are putting something in those kids' heads, teaching them some life skills, as a first feeding them some healthy food. That's a very positive thing for families and folks that need help.
So do you find that as a result of the youth being involved, that the parents come along, or do they stay out of the picture? And another question I'm thinking is, do you have some youth that have grown up in your program and are still involved?
The answer to the first question in terms of do the adults come along, not at first. I use a technique to really get the adults involved, because you need, in many of our programs, we need sign-offs by the parents. And to get those sign-offs, you really have to get the adults to the site or to a meeting or whatever. And the thing that draws people to any event is food, the very thing that we're involved in, the thing that we're going to grow. So what we do is we have, usually I use this technique of having a meal with the youth. And that meal is a very good meal. It's something like they would get at Thanksgiving or Christmas. Because remember, these kids are eating 3 out of 4 days, they're eating fast food. So you're bringing them in a really good meal, something they would get at grandma's house. And then they go home. And we let them take food home. Because many of the kids have are very sensitive to the fact that they have brothers and sisters at home that don't have food. So what we found is they always ask, can we take a plate? And then it took me a little while. I'm saying, why do you want to take all this food? You know, I'm saying, you guys can't eat all this food. And what they were doing is they were taking food home to their, they'd put like 5 ears of corn on a plate and all kinds of, you know, meat and greens and all that. And, you know, we'd wrap it in foil and they'd take it home. And what that was doing is they were taking food home because they didn't have any food at home, either for themselves, for the next day, or for the rest of the family. And out of that, we have a follow-up meal. And in this follow-up meal, we call it a family meal, where we invite the entire family. Now, the kids are the messengers. They go back to the family and they say, hey, Mom, we got to go. And it's a lot of single family, you know, mothers raising, you know, a bunch of kids. So, you know, the next thing we have is this big family meal, and the parents come, simply because the kids have gone home and told them how great the food was. And they've even brought, some of them brought food home. So that way the parents come, and that's how we get connected with the parents. That's the tool that we use.
Will Allen, it seems like you would be a really good role model for the whole family scene in the city. And I was wondering if you're finding, I know that statistically most of these families are single parent households, and most of them are the head of the family is a woman. Are you finding that the work has any impact on involving men back in the families? Is there something going on there?
Well, let me say that we become part of those kids as they enter our youth corps at 8 years old. We stay with them through college, and many of them wind up many of our employees are kids that started with me 16 years ago that are now working for us. We have one that's on our board of directors. So we do have an influence on the family, a positive influence from the standpoint that the kids eat better. We make the transformation of them eating at McDonald's to not wanting to go and eat at McDonald's or other fast food places because they start understanding that they feel better, they like the taste of the food, and, you know, grass-fed beef, you know, hamburger tastes way more better than anything they get at McDonald's, or the chicken, the grass-fed chicken tastes better than when I fry chicken or bake chicken or whatever for the kids. So it takes a long time for them to make that transformation. So food is a key piece to their lives that they happen during that transformation period from, like I said, 3 or 4 days of fast food to not wanting to go to eat fast food 3 or 4 days. So that's a big, big piece of our work with the kids, to have those kids make that transformation. But as far as getting more males involved, that has happened as well. When the fathers, and sometimes they're in and out fathers that come into the kids' lives and out of the kids' lives, and the kids start, when they do make those contacts, talk to the fathers about what they're doing, and sometimes we're able to get the fathers involved as well as the mother, who's primarily raising these kids. So we see some of that happening, but we become, like Hillary Clinton had this thing about it takes a village and so forth to raise a family. It truly does, and we're part of that. We become part of that raising of that child as they join our youth corps, because we're with them a lot of times. Their teachers are with them, and we work with the schools, because of our work with the schools, a lot of times we make those connections. It's a small world. You find out the teachers, we know the teachers, they bring the kids, and sometimes it starts with the kids being the ambassadors to tell the teachers, go visit Growing Power, take a tour, because I'm involved in this garden that they're working in. So the kids are the great ambassadors of change, I think. And they're the ones that tell us that they behave better when they're eating this good food, and we see it, and the grades improve. So, and you know, there have been many studies that show that. So it's not that, like, we got to go and quantify it. We just have to go and do it. You know, the part of the thing is not to just talk about. We don't talk about stuff. We do it. Just go out and make it happen, get something started. And then as you work along the continuum, you improve what you're doing. But if you just wait for the perfect storm, the perfect moment to start a project, you sit at the planning table forever. And our organization is an organization that's, you know, we go out and do stuff. And
what is that website if people wanted to learn more about Growing Power?
Growingpower.org. Very simple. And they can contact us, look at our website. All the information's on the website for all of our different programs and trainings. National trainings are our trainings, regional trainings around the country and so forth.
You are listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio, produced at WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio. Will Allen is telling how he went about establishing urban agriculture way beyond urban gardening in a major city. It's all laid out at growingpower.org. Richmond has many vibrant urban gardening projects and is moving toward more. It is serendipitous that I pulled this interview out of my hat at a time when our city is grappling with the question of how to better use vacant land within our communities and improve people's diets. Some of Will Allen's ideas will be useful to us as we develop policies and infrastructure to support our urban food system.
This used to be real estate, now it's only free. Was a Pizza Hut, now it's all covered with daisies.
the honky tonks, Dairy Queens, and 7-Elevens. You got it, you got it. And as things fell apart, nobody paid much attention.
Well, one of the nice things about Milwaukee, over the time, over those 16 years, we've gotten a city to make agriculture a permitted use in residential areas. So that's an important thing. But in saying that, it's still not an animal-friendly city. But if you're doing education and research, you can get a variance to have animals. But again, like you said, having a rooster is probably not cool because they're going to make somebody in the neighborhood upset with the noise. So you don't want them calling Department of Neighborhood Services because those are the people that take care of nuisances in the city. So you want to avoid that. And the way you avoid that is get engaged with the community and be looked at as an asset to the community. And by working with their kids and involved in the block watch clubs and let them use our facility for meetings and feeding them and so forth, there's a way to really get embedded into the city and looked at as somebody who's doing something positive in their neighborhood and improving their neighborhood, and also engaging the politicos, starting with the alder person or city council person or whatever you want to call them in your prospective city, have them on board. If you don't have them on board, it's very difficult to get things changed. Because I think the most powerful piece that we've used for policy change is our place, in that we're grandfathered a farm, but we went a step further. Instead of just fighting with the city or whatever, saying we're grandfathered as a farm since the 19th century, is to go and get your variances to have animals so that you can have animals and other livestock and be able to do composting right there in the city without, if you're not causing a nuisance. You can do those things, but you have to spend a lot of time on this piece I always talk about. It's the first piece. Don't even start anything else unless you engage the community and engage the city on all levels and engage the state and your federal politicos who can help you in terms of with grants and so forth from the government, and also the extension services and the universities. So we pretty much engaged everybody you could possibly engage in the city. And I shouldn't say that because new partners are coming on all the time. The businesses now, in terms of wanting us to compost their waste because they have a green initiative. Everybody has a green initiative today. So, and when they find out, you can take our waste, that becomes a much greener thing than putting a little filter on a water fountain or something like that. So as you move along a continuum, it starts from that. Then you can do amazing things. You can compost because you have to grow soil to be able to grow healthy food, to be able to grow healthy people, to grow healthy communities. It's kind of just from below the ground movement all the way up. It's not a top-down piece where somebody comes in and says, we're going to take 200 lots and throw some soil on there and the people are going to run out of their houses and start growing food. Doesn't happen that way. It happens by engaging and having a concrete example of something that works and something that can inspire people. And that's what I think Growing Power does best, that we have this integrated food system and that's embedded in the community. We bring dollars to the city by bringing in the last 5 years, five national conferences to the tune of $3.5 million to the city. So the city starts looking at you differently. The neighborhood, we're already on board with the neighbors because we're working with their kids. And then the state starts looking at you as a positive piece because you're getting positive publicity that makes the state of Wisconsin look, you're making the city look good. We're making them look good. So it's a win for them. It's a win for their community. It's a win for us because we're following our mission vision of what we said we're going to do when we wrote our articles of incorporation and so forth. So we're really living what we said we were going to do. And I think that's what it's all about, is visiting your mission every day. So it's embedded in my head what our mission is. And once you get off your mission, that's when you get in trouble. And it's not about an individual, it's about the community, because you're doing community work. And once you forget about that, is when you also get in trouble. So.
Well, the way you sketch it out is so clear. You've started with the very most basic things of building soil, growing soil, on up through influencing and encouraging governmental legislation and policy. Just to get back down below the grassroots for just a minute, give a quick overview of how you build soil in an urban environment. Where do you get your materials? Where do you get what's going on there?
Well, I'll go back to organizing. It starts with organizing from a standpoint of building relationships with the folks that have the waste. You just can't walk in and say, "I want your waste," and, you know, because they're giving it to the large companies, the waste managements of the world, and so forth. And those folks are businesses. They are on-time pickup. They got all the equipment in the world. Why would they want to switch that? Why would they take a chance on some upstart to come in? So you kind of have to prove yourselves with them too, which takes time. So you don't want to necessarily start with the guy that's going to give you 20,000-pound loads at a time. So you start with a small grocery store with a van or a pickup truck, and you move along a continuum. As time goes by, you increase your footprint of composting, and you learn how to do it. And all of a sudden, people find out so you build a background. You have to have a history of good performance. And from that history of good performance, then you can, run with the big dogs then. Because then I can go into a produce company that throws away thousands of pounds of vegetable waste a year and say, "Listen, we can save you money. We'll pick up your waste. We won't charge you." And that's how we get involved. But it's not like overnight you walk in there and all of a sudden everybody's going to start giving you 20,000-pound loads. You know, we pick up 20 to 30,000 pounds of brewery waste every week. We pick up a couple thousand pounds of coffee grinds from coffee roasters. We've got all these different places we pick up from. Very diverse clientele of waste, paper. Milwaukee Public Schools wants to give us all of their waste paper for the carbon end of composting. We have, farms that have moldy hay. We're in a state where there's a lot of grass, and when we have a wet summer, we have a lot of moldy hay, so we actually buy that from farmers to help support some of my rural farmer friends. We're able to get leaves and wood chip from the city. They'll give us as much as we want, so we have trucks rolling into our site every day. So we're kind of that place that they can dump their leaves and their wood chip, because their lots are overflowing with that stuff over the years. We have a lot of trees around our major cities, so trees are coming down, or they're trimming trees around power lines. So they're always doing that kind of work, and because of the ash borer problem, they have a lot of trees that have to come down. So to get to the ash trees, they have to take down other trees. So they're always chipping, you know. So it's an unlimited supply of waste. We're only getting a fraction. This year we did 6 million pounds of food residue alone, three times that much of carbon waste into our compost. But it's really about building that trust, taking a relationship into a partnership. So it takes time to do that. So patience is like one of the key pieces. You know, if you don't have patience in doing this work, you can't do it, because things don't happen overnight. And like I said, we started 16 years ago, and it's been a continuum, and now we're at a point where people are coming to us rather than us going out. So once you get to that certain tipping point, things change very quickly. And you have to be ready for it. You have to build your infrastructure to be able to handle those requests. Because if you can't handle them, then it becomes a problem for you too. Because people look at you and say, "Oh, you're not reliable because you can't handle it." So you know, you have to be ready for that. So that's what I always tell people. You know, it's one thing to be able to ask for something, but if you don't have the infrastructure to handle it, it's not a good thing.
Well, this has been really, really helpful. I appreciate your time very much, Will Allen. And if you give me just 10 seconds about your other, you started in Milwaukee, and then you have your daughter runs the similar program in Chicago. And where else do you have growing power?
Well, we started in Milwaukee. We have three farms in the city of Chicago, and we have three farms in the state of Wisconsin. We have one rural farm and two urban farms in Milwaukee. And I work in Chicago. We have an office there. We don't have the same infrastructure, but we have farms there that we're operating and working with the city. One is in downtown Chicago in the picturesque Grant Park, where we have a two-acre farm in Grant Park, and we have one in Jackson Park, and we have one at Cabrini Green, which is a pretty famous housing project, growing food on asphalt with our compost. So we're able to grow our soil and take it down to Chicago and build gardens, because whenever we do urban agriculture, we have to use all new soil. We don't use any existing soil because the soil is so contaminated and hard pan, and you never want to dig down because there's lots of debris and so forth. So it's about growing soil. If you're able to grow healthy soil, you can grow healthy, good food. So that's what it's all about.
And by growing that, you grow healthy community and healthy youth and healthy grown-ups. I want to thank you for your time, but I want to thank you mostly for the work that you're doing and for the model you're providing for other cities and other organizations to move forward with this vital work. Thank you, Will Allen.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
And thank you for listening to Lightly on the Ground Radio. Tune in to Richmond Independent Radio often and experience radio for the rest of us. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening.
You got it. We used to microwave.